Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, July 15th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you here. We made it to the weekend. We're coming to you live and direct from beautiful legal potland, Oregon, high atop the Ardea Towers here on the South Waterfront. And I do mean high atop. It's kind of a partly cloudy day here in Potland, but it's a great day for marijuana law reform. We got plenty of stories to tell you on today's show. Joining us live in the studio, we've got a guest joining us at the half past mark. Don Morse is here. He'll be talking about the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair. That's right, we're having a fair out here, and cannabis is the center of it. We got all sorts of great new developments and some fun that we're going to have here in the state of Oregon when it comes to appreciating the great cannabis cultivators that we have in this state. And I'll put Oregon cannabis cultivation up against any place on earth. So we'll learn all about that coming up at half past. Also coming up on the show today, we've got more of those highlights from the Vancouver, British Columbia Cannabis Hemp Expo. Coming up right after our Cannabis Radio News, an extended version of Behind the Headlines, where Renee Gagnon will be telling us all about the differences between the United States and Canada in their medical dispensary systems. An interesting compare and contrast, so check that out coming up right after the headlines. And at the end of the show, we're going to hear from our friend, the hemp ace herself, Joy Beckerman from Seattle, Washington. She gave a presentation on hempcrete. It'll run a little bit over the end of the show today, at least the end of hour one. It's a 16-minute presentation, but all about the virtues of this industrial building material, hempcrete. If you don't know about it, you will soon enough, and you'll want to learn about it here on the end of our show today. We'll also take things into hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We'll hear more from Andrea Herman, the leading expert on industrial hemp. She'll tell us what she's learned recently in her world travels about the future of the greatest cash crop we will see on this planet for food, fuel, fiber, and other sorts of uses, including medicine. We're starting to get a lot of use of hemp crops for CBD. She'll talk about that. And again, that's all from the Vancouver, British Columbia Cannabis Hemp Expo that took place last weekend. But all of that comes after our Cannabis Radio News. And in the headlines today, we've got stories coming to you from Helena, Montana, where we get yet another state that has made the ballot for marijuana reform for our November elections. We've got so much to cover this year in marijuana election night 2016. Make sure you stick with us here on CannabisRadio.com, where we'll bring you all of the results first as the states vote on legalization and medical marijuana across the country. Also out of Colorado, new report on Colorado's economy, how it has responded to marijuana legalization over the past 2 years. You can probably guess it's good news. Also in Boston, Massachusetts, a complaint against a cop who was campaigning against marijuana legalization in uniform. We got two stories from Santa Ana, California, some good news for the Adult Use of Marijuana Act in California, and some bad news for some patient abusing cops in Santa Ana. And finally, here in Portland, Oregon, we'll tell you about another event allowing the distribution of marijuana here in Oregon and how they're getting around some of the latest rules and regulations. That's all coming up here on The Russ Belville Show, live and exclusive here on CannabisRadio.com. Make sure to check out our sponsors and patronize them. Patronize them. Don't patronize them. Make sure that you let them know you heard it on CannabisRadio.com so we can stay on the air. We're back next with the Cannabis Radio News, your latest headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
We do have John McAfee. He's running for the Libertarian Party nomination for president. What makes someone like you want to take the reins of this?
We're so far behind, it's frightening. And in a cyber war, we can't hack into the Chinese. Back in 1979, they started building cyber defense systems. We didn't even think about it until 20 years ago. I see no candidates and certainly no one within government capable of dealing with this issue.
The Stoner Jesus Show, live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
As it relates to my brother, there's one thing I know for sure. He kept us safe.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, July 15th, 2016. Helena, Montana. A measure that seeks to expand the availability of Montana medical marijuana has qualified for the November ballot. The Secretary of State's office certified Wednesday that supporters of Initiative 182 had gathered 26,668 verified signatures. I-182 seeks to reverse legislative and legal action that gutted a 2004 voter-approved law that legalized the substance. If approved, the measure would lift a 3-patient limit for caregivers that is scheduled to go into effect next month, establish licensing fees to pay for administering the program, and include post-traumatic stress among the conditions for which medical marijuana can be used. Another measure, still awaiting certification, seeks to repeal the state law that permits the medicinal use of marijuana. Denver, Colorado. A new economic report shows that since marijuana legalization, Colorado's economy is booming. The Colorado Business Review report, released Thursday by the University of Colorado Leeds School of Business, shows that employment, housing, and income indicators in Colorado are meeting or exceeding national averages. Patty Silverstein, president and chief economist at Development Research Partners in Jefferson County, told The Cannabist that in 2014, the first year of legalization, there was, quote, a 3.5% increase, and in 2015, a 4.9% increase in food manufacturing employment, end quote, likely attributable to edibles. Chemical manufacturing employment, where extracts would be classified, increased 1.4% in 2014 and 3.9% in 2015. Colorado's GDP increased 3.6% overall, and the state added 62,000 new jobs in the 12-month period through last May. Boston, Massachusetts. The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol is filing an ethics complaint against a police officer who campaigned against their initiative while on the clock. Jim Borgasani, the spokesperson for the pro-marijuana campaign, said the campaign alleges that John Carmichael, Jr., the police chief of Walpole, appeared at an anti-marijuana legalization event during working hours in his uniform on June 23rd. The event was sponsored by the Safe and Healthy Massachusetts campaign, the group campaigning against the legalization initiative. Carmichael denies any impropriety in his actions, stating to MassLive.com, quote, "As a public safety official, I have a responsibility to the community to educate them about the dangers of marijuana," end quote. The marijuana campaign originally filed the complaint with state elections officials, who then referred it to the Ethics Commission. Santa Ana, California. The Adult Use of Marijuana Act has added another $2 million to its campaign coffers this week. The legalization proposal, now dubbed Prop 64, received another $1.25 million from its primary benefactor, former Facebook President Sean Parker, on top of the first million he already donated. The new Approach PAC, a committee controlling the philanthropic donations from the estate of the late Peter Lewis, has contributed another $750,000, doubling their commitment to California legalization. The campaign is expected to raise a total of $10 to $20 million. In comparison, the campaign opposing the measure, favored by 60% of Californians, has raised just a scant $131,000. Santa Ana, California. The police officers caught on hidden camera allegedly abusing a disabled woman and eating marijuana-infused products have been fired by the Santa Ana Police Department. A spokesperson confirmed officers Brandon Matthew Sontag, Nicole Lynn Quijas, and Jorge Arroyo are no longer employed by the SAPD. The former officers have pleaded not guilty to charges of vandalism and petty theft that arose from their May 2015 raid on the Sky High Holistic Marijuana Dispensary in Santa Ana. The officers were never drug tested and face 6 months to a year in prison if convicted. Portland, Oregon. The city of Portland has signed off on a public event allowing the distribution of free marijuana samples. The Oregon Cannabis Association is putting on the Summer Fair, an event that will feature dozens of Oregon cannabis cultivators and will be held July 24th at the North Warehouse in Portland. The city has cracked down on paid admission events where marijuana samples are given out, so OCA has gotten around that by making the event free. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, July 15th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the fingerboard extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our cannabis focus.
A lifelong cannabis enthusiast, she was given the opportunity in 2013 to apply for and become Canadian MMPR License 005, taking the company public 6 months later, becoming the world's first female public cannabis company CEO. After exiting in 2015, Renee has focused on cannabis supply chain management. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you very much. So in 2014, we were awarded MMPR 005, which was an interesting experience and gave us a chance to experience what the government at the time had dictated would be the leading edge of their new cannabis strategy. I want to talk specifically about the differences between the marketplace in Canada and in the United States and some of the key major differences between what's going on. If you look at the United States, they have, in Canada, we have a federal medical program. In the United States, they don't have a federal program except a limited one started way back in the 70s. They've left it up to individual states. In Canada, the LPs have access to banking, the dispensaries don't. And in the United States, nobody within the cannabis sector has access to legitimate banking, which means that you have problems on raising capital and being able to pay your bills. You've got issues on zoning. Zoning has become now one of the biggest inhibiting factors in California, with most of the pre-zoned property that was available for production being speculated on. And zoning tends to be an Achilles heel in any of the programs, and it's usually one of the most not looked at. And there's a lot of jurisdictions that proactively banned dispensaries from existing years ago, and you have to start at the lobbying level now and continue forward. The biggest difference is that there is some federal support in Canada, zero federal support in the United States, and that ties into governance on product manufacturing, labeling, as we move towards legalization. Canada is an incredibly complicated and mixed up patchwork. We've got a combination of compassion clubs, dispensaries, licensed producers. The relationship between a patient and their doctor gets confused. You can't send them in their traditional direction towards a pharmacy. You have to direct them in two different directions, either to an LP or to a dispensary if they have products that you can't get from an LP. The problem is once you start looking at the dispensaries, you've got for-profit, you've got non-profit. The non-profit are typically run as compassion societies, and then the profit dispensaries are again in there for as a business method. The difficulty is there's no direct path for physicians to be able to prescribe the products that they want to the patients they want without having to channel the patient in either the gray or the black area or force them to go to the LP market. The biggest difference is going to be coming forward is that as different players want to start entering this, such as liquor distribution, private liquor, other various forms, it's going to make the area more difficult for patients to figure out how they can obtain their product and how they plan to move on. The big difference. In the United States, this market has been viewed with unbridled capitalism. Everywhere you go, people are putting down their money to create products and companies that we don't see here. It's been advancing so fast, you're starting to see companies producing terpene pucks, flavoring combinations, things that are very nuanced in the product level that we don't hear. But on both sides of the border, nobody's paying attention to the big things that will kill you later on, which come down to packaging, labeling, compliance, production standards. The United States is way farther ahead on almost every form of non-medicinal marijuana. Canada's got an advantage only by having a national program that's at least universally accessible Canada-wide. Revenue-wise, you see in the States, though, the recreational market is zooming, and it's going to be exceedingly gapping the medical. And then in states like Washington State, they collapse the medical, so this chart no longer applies. Canada, we've essentially got an oligopoly. You don't have unrestrained competition. You've got 31 licensed producers. You've got approximately anywhere from 400 to 500 dispensaries. You've got tens of thousands of MAR producers. You've got home growers. You've got an entire ecosystem Canada-wide that isn't represented by the 31 companies. Patient growth has been continuous, but not spectacular. And when you look at the actual sales numbers coming in from the LPs, the top five take approximately 80% of the patient load. That's a very, very thin amount of traffic for the remaining LPs. Makes it very complicated, makes it very regulated, and in order to play within this space, your starting level of getting in is starting at 5 million, going upwards of 10 million before approval. That leads into some other problems. So, cost of compliance. This is one of the biggest arguments I get in Canada, is that because it's voluntary, we don't have any regulations for the folks outside the LP stack. It comes down to, do I have to? What's the point of this? Is there really any cost in it? Well, the cost of not complying is staggering. In Colorado, a non-compliance event could cost you $20,000 an incident. We haven't started seeing in Canada, Health Canada fining people for labeling, but they have the ability to level tens of thousands of dollars per incident per fine. And that is only going to escalate as they find themselves more frustrated through the traditional means of punishing people. They're going to start going to the other methods, which includes mislabeling. It includes accidentally mislabeling it. It means not putting lot numbers on it. And if you don't know what a lot number is, you've already got yourself down the creek there. Compliance has an expense, yes, but the cost of not complying is up to three times whatever it is you didn't do in the first place. The biggest problem among the MMPR, if anybody's done it or if you've been in it, the compliance burden is staggering. The people that you need to dedicate to specifically managing compliance is excessive. You can't have one QA working in three facilities. You have to have a QA for every one. And this means that you've got hiring problems. You've got issues of where you're built. The ability to just destroy garbage would make you think of decommissioning Soviet nuclear stockpiles. It's unnecessary, but it does exist. And the problem is you can choose to not comply and hope to get along, or you can start investigating what the simple compliance is that will help you get you through this next stage. It's not all about bank vaults and security cameras. It's actually more to do with paperwork. And if you're not into paperwork, this is not a good industry for you. Rich White Guy Club. That's kind of the problem. And what the central sort of under threat for the dispensary industry in Canada and North America wide. The cost of getting into the LP business, as I said, is anywhere from $3 to $10 million. And that pretty much excludes 99.9% of women and minorities. To my way of thinking, the dispensary model is the only affordable, out-of-the-box solution that allows more people to participate with a greater spread of economic starting point. And then we let Darwin decide. The thing about retail and capitalism is that the customers always eventually decide who are the ones that they prefer. They go to the stores they prefer. They buy the brands they prefer. Once you set up an oligopoly or a monopoly where you say you may only buy from the following, it inevitably will create a back. We already buy from the black market. I spent 30 years buying from the black market before there was a legal source. Most of the people here did because there wasn't LPs. They're not going to go away. The question is, how do we legitimize it? How do we bring it forward? And how do we bring that productive capacity into the overall? And the only way to do it is to bring them higher up towards the LPs. We can't bring them down. And again, on the minority issues, we have to remember that in the United States specifically, minorities paid the heaviest price for the drug war. In Canada, it was also the same when you look at Aboriginal incarceration. And when we look at economic impact, this industry is zero right now. We're just starting. We can choose to ignore equality and diversity and hope it'll all figure out later, but I can guarantee you it won't happen because the system won't do it voluntarily. If we want women and minorities to be involved in cannabis in a significant fashion, it has to start now, and we can't do it by automatically defaulting to a massive corporate model. It automatically makes it a rich white guy club. But my real reason that we need to interfere less, we believe in capitalism, supposedly. We believe in a free market, supposedly. We believe in retail, supposedly. But on this subject, it's somewhere between nuclear radiation and evil. And the problem is that isn't the way it works. When you want to buy bread, you don't mail order it and wait a month. When you want milk, you don't mail order it and wait a month. You want to walk into a store like an adult, a competent human being, show your ID, put down money, buy what you want, and walk out without the judgment of society on you. And this is where we need to head, regardless of what the government wants, regardless of what activists want, regardless of what corporations want. The public wants to buy weed, they want to do it in a store, and they don't want to feel like criminals, and it behooves all of us to work on making that happen. Control's an illusion on this product. It pre-existed humans. It's pre-existed every civilization that's legalized or made it illegal. It's predated all of us in this room. It doesn't matter how old you are in this room. You weren't here first. It was. And as long as we keep fighting each other on who was here longer, who was bigger, who raised the most money, who's the most organic, the other side gets to divide us, conquer us, and ignore us. We're all in cannabis, we're all working on cannabis, and there is no right way. The plant predates us all. So on that note, I want to say thank you, and I want you to ponder that whatever you're doing right now, do more. Don't wait for the government to approve you. Don't wait for the city council to approve you. We're all doing it. Do it simultaneously. We all advance together at the same time. They can't stop it.
That's Renee Gagnon speaking at the Cannabis Hemp Expo in Vancouver, British Columbia, giving us a great rundown of the differences between the dispensary systems in the United States and Canada. And there certainly is a feeling of revolution and rebellion going on, especially in the Vancouver, BC area. I'd encourage anybody who wants to visit Vancouver to do so. It's definitely worth checking out. If you're 19 or older, you will definitely have yourself a good time. All right, when we come back, we've got time for our Cultivator's Corner, and today we're speaking with Don Morse. He's going to tell us all about the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair coming up soon here in the great state of Oregon. The best cannabis in the world. Stay tuned, we got to pay some bills. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
I hope everybody's got their vape pen handy or their pipe or their bong or whatever you use to do your medicine.
But you don't, it's not a requirement. You don't have to be high for this show.
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
I don't know who you're talking to. You have to be high to do anything. At least I do. I don't know about you. In fact, I've been high so long that being straight is another high.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Say marijuana grows like a weed.
But growing high-quality marijuana takes more than just throwing a seed in the ground. Join us as we speak with the most recognized cannabis horticulturists in the world and take your live grow questions in our Cultivator's Corner. Welcome back, everyone. Today in the Cultivator's Corner, we've got a live guest in the studio. It's Don Morse joining us. How are you doing, Don?
Very well. Thanks for having me here, Russ.
We are so excited to be talking about this next event that's coming up, the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair. And I know the lady behind it, Mary Lou Burton, and the CCC. They've done a couple of great events here in Oregon. So tell us, when is this event and what's going down?
Well, it is August 13th and 14th at the Oregon State Fairgrounds. I am the director of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council, and the members of the council thought it was about time to recognize the needs of growers and have an event specifically for them. And so we've organized this fair to bring all the information growers need. That we have soil companies and seed companies, and Twister's going to be there. And,
oh, yeah.
Grow pots. All kinds of lighting companies, solar panel company, you name it, they're going to be there.
So this is for, you know, Oregonians out there. We now have the legal right to cultivate four cannabis plants at home,
right?
More if we've got medical recommendations. But how do you get started? Where do you get your first pots? Who do you talk to? This sounds like the place to go.
Yeah, we've heard from some of our members who own, you know, horticultural shops. And they said the biggest thing is educating the public as to what they need for the type of grow they want to do. So we're going to have companies there that are catering to the small consumer that's growing their four plants at home, and the large ones that are growing a tier two, 40,000 square foot grow on an acre or so of land here.
Mm. So all sizes and shapes of grows out there. You could learn something here at this Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair, August 13th and 14th. Just few weeks away. Are there any costs associated with the fair, parking, anything like that?
It's $20 to get in at the door. I think it's going to be well worth it because the Oregon Cannabis Business Council was able to work with the state fair for this exhibit, and then also for the actual state fair, which begins 2 weeks later.
Oh.
And what we're doing is we're having the first ever live plant judging that's been, to our knowledge, held in the nation.
Wow.
And what we're going to do at the Growers Fair is judge non-flowering plants. We're hoping they come in between 2 and 4 foot tall and, you know, nice bushy plants.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Ed Rosenthal as our head judge.
Excellent. The guru of ganja. Yep. Couldn't get a better judge.
We have four other people from Southern Oregon and Northern Oregon that are experienced growers and recognized in the field. And they will be working with Ed to determine the 9 winners. We have 3 classifications, Indica, Sativa, and Hybrid. And there will be a first, second, and third place in each of those categories.
Hmm.
We're going along with the thought that, you know, the state legislature this year recognized cannabis as a farm crop. So this is very much a 4-H type event.
Okay.
There's nothing to smoke. There's nothing to take home. It is simply education and who's growing the best and healthiest plants.
Hmm.
And then those 9 winners will appear at the Oregon State Fair. It will be the first time in the nation that live cannabis has been exhibited as a farm crop at a state fair.
Wow.
The people down at the state fair checked with all the other 49, and to their knowledge, no, this has never been done.
What? The Tennessee State Fair didn't show off plants, really?
So what we'll have at the state fair is the Oregon Cannabis Business Council will have their booth, and within that booth is going to be a greenhouse, and you'll have to be 21 or over to enter. But if you are, you can go in and see what 9 award-winning plants look like.
Hmm. So why judge the non-flowering cannabis plants instead of flowering ones?
Well, a little glitch in the law does not allow for the transportation manifesting of live plants. all those conditions exist if the plant is now dead, but that's not doing us
not
any
fun
good.
To judge. Then it's just a standard, you know, like a cannabis competition where they're judging buds and they're smoking right. them, and that's a whole different thing.
Right. So this is going to be the highlight, and we've also arranged for the Energy Trust to be present, and they're going to give some seminars on how their organization can help growers reduce their energy costs.
Oh, good.
Believe it or not, the federal government will subsidize your grow lights.
What?
So, yes.
Really?
Yeah. So come by and listen to that seminar for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
And then we also have the OLCC is going to be there, and they're going to be presenting their latest rules and answering questions on what growers should be aware of now that they're getting closer to the harvest season, mm-hmm. because there have been so many changes and there is a bit of confusion out there, and we want to make sure that good actors remain good and, you know, not confused.
How is that looking as far as the rollout of our recreational growing licenses? Didn't we just remove an out-of-state requirement or an out-of-state ban of some sort?
Well, the out-of-state ban was an attempt to not allow out-of-state investment.
Right, right.
And yes, we did remove that because we, shortly after passing it and living with it for a few months, we realized that investment within Oregon was not going to be enough to mm-hmm. jumpstart this industry. And we're hoping that, you know, fairs like we're going to do, you know, we are working with Mary Lou Burton with CCC, as you said, and she is just fantastic at putting together something like this. You know, every facet of the industry is going to be represented, and as well as all of these seminars that can help growers, and, you know, everything is just time for them.
How is it working with the state officials, the fair officials, telling them you wanted to display live cannabis plants?
It took a lot of convincing and yeah. a lot of discussion, but they are, now that it's a farm crop, these people are very reasonable. Of course, you know, the fair itself is 21 and over only, and there will be guards checking ID at the door. So don't even think about coming, bringing with your kids or whatever to the growers fair. It's strictly for adults. And then the state fair, what we're doing is the plants will be hidden away in a greenhouse, and you've got to be 21 or older to get into it. And of course, there's no consumption anywhere on the state fairgrounds, and nothing is being handed out. There's no free cannabis. There are no sales, etc. This is simply about celebrating the plant. And I think it's time that we do that, and we recognize the growers in this state for what they're doing to advance the industry.
You mentioned there being three categories, sativa, indica, and hybrid. And that, to me, suggests that we're judging just the plants being grown for medical consumption. Is there a possibility of hemp getting involved in this in the future?
Not at this time. When you introduce hemp, it becomes very confusing. And
yeah.
You know, maybe in years to come, Mary Lou and I expect this to become an annual event, just like the CCC conference at the Expo Center every winter. You know, we help out there as well. I think these are two main events in the cannabis industry here in Oregon that you're going to see again and again. And each time you do, they're just going to get better. Mm.
I know I've enjoyed the two events that Ms. Burton has put on so far, and I know this one will be a great one. Let's give people the lowdown on how to get involved with this. If they are a cannabis cultivator, how can they enter into these fairs?
Just go to the website, Oregon Growers or Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair. There is an application process there. Each grower is allowed to submit up to three plants, one in each category, and the fee is $60 per plant.
And you were looking for like 2 to 4 foot non-flowering plants.
That would be the optimal, I would think, to give the judges something to, you know, really look at and examine. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention is the overall winner, best in show,
uh-huh.
ten $10,000 in prizes.
Oh, well, you can't forget to mention that, Don. Come on, 10 grand for your best non-flowering plant. That's the most money anyone's ever made off a non-flowering plant in cannabis history. All right, $10,000 first prize. We should we talk about burying the lead. $10,000 first prize for your best non-flowering cannabis plant at the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair. It's August 13th and 14th. Did you say at the state fairgrounds?
At the state fairgrounds.
At the state fairgrounds.
And tickets will be available at the door, so...
Just at the door? Can they get them online?
They can get them online, okay. Too.
How about some of... just real quick before we wrap up here, you mentioned the OCBC. If people are interested in that, how do they work with you guys?
Go to our website, OregonCBC.com, and you can check out what we do. We're a trade association for the industry here in the state of Oregon. And we're growing, and we'd like to have you as a member.
All right. Looking forward to the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair. First of its kind in the nation, live cannabis plants at a state fair. And Don Morris is the man that helped make that happen. Thanks, Don.
You're welcome. Thanks, Russ.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. When we come back, we'll have time for Joy Beckerman, the hemp ace herself. She's going to tell you all about hempcrete, the building material of the future. It was her presentation at the Cannabis Hemp Expo in Vancouver, British Columbia. We bring that to you right after the break.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
CannabisRadio.com keeps you in the know Monday through Friday on air and on demand with Cannabis Radio News, presented with the definitive worldwide news source, the Associated Press. Stay informed with exclusive news on all things cannabis. Cannabis Radio News, live weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, during the Russ Belville Show, or download the daily podcast exclusively on CannabisRadio.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. When breaking news happens in the cannabis industry, Cannabis Radio News delivers the details first.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year. Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
And now, Joy Beckerman with all you ever wanted to know about hempcrete.
I have Joy Beckerman. She is the principal at Hemp Ace International, a Seattle-based global cannabis consulting and brokerage firm. She has been involved in industrial hemp on both U.S. coasts for over a quarter of a century, and she is going to tell you more about her extensive hemp career now. We'd also like to thank her for traveling from Seattle to join us. Welcome, Joy.
I am actually not all that used to inserting my own history into my presentations. I'd like to just teach about hemp. Salome has asked me to share a bit of my own history within the movement of industrial hemp, and to the extent that enlightens anyone with regard to their own path and the history of the movement, I am happy to share that. But I will scroll quickly through these slides so that I can get to hempcrete, which is one of my favorite topics. Very psychedelic awakening. Most of us in the U.S. learned about industrial hemp through alternative counterculture. I got my first industrial hemp flyer at a Grateful Dead show in 1990, and that changed the course and trajectory of my entire life. I thought that we were meant to live in peace and love and music while we were killing the planet. I had no idea there was a solution and that the solution was unlawful until the Grateful Dead. That same year in 1990 was the 100th anniversary of the massacre at Wounded Knee on the Oglala Lakota Sioux Reservation, Pine Ridge. I attended that ceremony. People from all over the world came. That was also a life-changing spiritual experience for me, and I committed myself yet that much more to the healing of the planet. I then opened up the first hemp store in the state of New York in the early 90s called Heaven on Earth, and did a lot of activist work through that hemp store. One of them was stamping I Grew Hemp out of a thought bubble coming out of George Washington, which caught the attention of the U.S. Secret Service and was able to get some really great activism done through that, because the Associated Press took up this situation that I'd received a cease and desist letter for mutilating U.S. currency by stamping I Grew Hemp out of George Washington's mouth. I, of course, refused to cease and desist. And as it turned out, it is only mutilation under the statute if it's your intention to render a bill unfit for circulation. And the U.S. Secret Service in Albany, who had not suspected that they would get quite so much attention, called me and said, "Yo, Joy, we were just following up on a fax bill that the Woodstock police sent to us when they could not successfully purchase marijuana from you at your hemp store. The fact is, it's not unlawful, but please, would you stamp in red ink, because the purple ink is causing the bank machines, money counting machines, to screw up. So always use purple ink, never use red ink. We like to go ahead and screw those money counting machines up." Then 1995, a really special High Times Cannabis Cup occurred. Late Stephen Gaskins of Tennessee, who had an incredible community that lasted for several decades and is still in effect, was the MC, a high priest of the Rainbow family. Fantuzzi was the another sort of high priest of the Cannabis Cup that year. Lots of incredible people within the global industrial hemp and marijuana movements attended this 8th annual High Times Cannabis Cup, where Alex Gray, who's a tremendous spiritual visionary artist, was there present with his wife Alice, and this goddess Cannabia was created for this Cannabis Cup. Keep in mind, really, the Cannabis Cups were rainbow gatherings, and the Rainbow family, for as much of a reputation as they may have, was also a tremendous part and continues to be a tremendous part of my spiritual development and what inspires me and motivates me and brings me back to center of what my real mission is every day. The fact that prohibition was going on in America and North America while we were experiencing these coffee shops in Amsterdam and this civilized life where people were honoring the plant in with fancy espresso machines, with organic food, this was life-changing for us. And I said, you know what, if this is coexisting during prohibition in North America, if anybody can do this, America can do this, Canada can do this, we've got this. And so the Amsterdam effect was big for me. Then the first hemp bill passed in Vermont, the state of Vermont, in 1996. And that was really earth-changing for me, life-changing for me. It's a very small world, and I lived in New York, so Vermont was right next door. And I was appointed to serve as secretary of the Vermont Hemp Council, which was statutorily mandated as part of that hemp bill, and served in that position for 22 years. 2.5 years, and then and ran three Vermont Emporiums. So that was a tremendous bit of education. Vermont to this day remains quite active and is growing several thousand acres of hemp. I then got into compliance and complex civil litigation to raise my two children, who became student athletes, and one is now a senior in college and one is out. And that compliance and that civil litigation and all of the civic duties from being a highly involved, if not totally over-involved, parent, really served my activism very well as legalization then began to take root and is taking root and is taking place. And it's a tremendous revolution in both countries. Of course, we have several states. We have 50 different states, so we have 50 different laws when something isn't happening federally. We have 28 states that have legalized industrial hemp, several that have legalized marijuana. I live in one of them, Washington. So my projects now, which I would like to focus more on, I do through my company, Hemp Ace International. I do consulting, legal support, legal writing, a lot of licensing issues, but I serve on many boards and advisory boards for shaping the industry, standards, ethics, regulation, and lawmaking, and I work with our legislators and our policymakers directly. And have written lots of legislation, and we finally passed a hemp bill in Washington, by the way, just this March. We legalized marijuana in the state of Washington 3 years before we legalized industrial hemp. A lot of folks find that counterintuitive. Now, my favorite thing to do is to educate. I public speak. I write. I really just do outreach. My favorite thing to do, if I could find a way to monetize it in some comfortable way, all I would do is do what I'm doing now. All I ever want to do is tell the story and sing the song of industrial hemp in all of its many forms. Now, permaculture, of course, the healing of the soil is really what will lead to our Earth's stable future. And I really believe that cannabis can be the vehicle for this consciousness, for these regenerative, nature-mimicking, whole systems. Techniques that will lead to a permanent culture that will give and give and regenerate over time. And I really believe cannabis, whether it's marijuana and especially industrial hemp through agriculture, is going to be able to teach this to people, proper agronomy practices and how we can actually heal the soil. Now, what drives all of this education, of course? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for knowing that that's really the most important thing, guys. We got to survive. So, and then, but having to do all of this with also throwing in there how we can drive it economically, how you're going to make money at it, folks. And so I have to do that dance too, but I've learned to get good at it. And that's what drives legislation. That's what everyone wants. Is it going to save us money? Is it going to cost us money? Is it going to make us money? That's what drives the whole thing. So once you get those factors in and somebody who, legislators and regulators who do want to get involved with regenerative agriculture and healing the soil and regenerating the family farm and the economy and taking all of that back, that's when magic happens legislatively. Now, Andrea Herman is a huge part of my life. She is my finest sister. She is my mentor, my partner in hemp and lime, and also hemp nutrition. So I do a lot of work around hemp food and hemp agronomy, and a big, huge thanks to the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance, of which I'm a member, and to Hemp Production Services and Hemp Genetics International, with whom I do work with Andrea through those companies, and where I get to learn so much about farming and agronomy and agriculture and how it all works so that I can bring it back to America. I learn from the Canadians. I, of course, also am in tremendous touch with our Kentucky and Colorado and Oregon partners in America, but it's the Canadian farmers and the Canadian infrastructure that we get our most valuable information from when it comes to that immediate, again, seed and human nutrition infrastructure, because we don't have any hemp processing facilities either. If you don't have them in Canada since legalization in 1998, you can believe we don't have any in America. Phytocannabinoids, also something I work on. It is just a main area of interest to me, and it is an area where a tremendous amount of ethics, standards, and legal understanding is required. So I also teach attorneys, licensed practicing attorneys, on something, a course that I call the Curious Legal Status of Industrial Hemp-Derived Phytocannabinoids and CBD. Lots of misinformation around it. And by the way, folks interested, Martin Lee of Project CBD and ProjectCBD.org is a great resource. Should also mention that Martin Lee lived in Woodstock, New York at the same time that I did when I had that hemp store. So apparently Mark and I go way back. He had to remind me at a Hemp Industries Association conference that he used to buy hemp stuff at the hemp store in Woodstock. So it's a small family. And he also has had quite a psychedelic journey. Hempcrete, let's get to that. It's really one of my favorite subjects. Andrea Herman, again, is also the president of Hemp Technologies, which is the builder of the first permanent hempcrete homes in America. And I am their lead American Hempcrete workshop instructor. It's one of my favorite things to do. Hemp and lime. We can replace all of these toxic construction materials just with hemp and lime. The pink stuff, the Tyvek, the horrible drywall, the vinyl siding, all of that we can replace with a living, breathable wall system. It is a mold-resistant, rot-resistant, fire-resistant, pest-resistant construction infill material that provides the optimal indoor air quality. And again, we can eliminate over 50% of our landfill construction waste once we can move over to these alternative building materials. A hempcrete home will last anywhere between 500 to 1,500 years, depending on the materials that you use. And that gets into some serious detail. For proper herd for hempcrete, guys, you want herd that is processed to the appropriate moisture content and that is processed to a particular geometric particle range in order for it to be an appropriate bioaggregate for construction infill, and it must not have more than a minimum content of, a maximum content, rather, I'm sorry, of chaff or bast fiber. We are talking about herd or shive. Some people call it shiv. The inner woody core of the hemp plant is the cellulose that we use for hempcrete, along with a lime-based water, lime-based binder and water, three simple ingredients. For the most part. Now, the amazing part of hempcrete, of course, is the science behind hempcrete. And 70% of the magic is lime. It's not actually hemp at all, but believe me, that other 30% is very important. We'll get onto that in a second. But the reality is, why is hempcrete, by the way, if we could rename it, we would call it hemp fill. It gives folks the idea, the misimpression that hempcrete is some type of substitute for concrete. It is not. It is a construction infill material. It is an insulation. It must be above ground and cannot touch the earth. So limestone comes from it. It is developed over tens of thousands of years, if not more. It is a stone. It is compressed plankton, insects, and other living material that is compressed into a stone. There are different quarries throughout the world, and we quarry them out to get our to make our lime. However, we have to heat it. For Portland cement, we would heat that lime to about 3,000 degrees. It's a tremendous carbon footprint. It takes a lot of energy to heat to 3,000 degrees. With lime, we only need to go about 900 degrees. By the way, this is pushing CO2 out of the lime during this heating process, which we have to account for. We're now pushing CO2. That's our carbon footprint. We're pushing it out into the air, but it's also driving holes and making the lime a porous, spongy, colloid material while we're heating it. And this becomes part of the explanation as to why lime is vapor permeable. When we're done with that, we're left with calcium oxide, quicklime, a caustic substance. Then we add water to what is left over there. That's the slaking process. And at that point, we're left with calcium hydroxide. It's a putty, or when we dry it, it turns into a powder. This is what we buy. Then we add water to it to make it into a mortar or a binder. And guess what happens, guys? Here's the carbon sequestering. The limestone wants to become limestone again. And so it starts grabbing carbon molecules from the environment and petrifies and fossilizes over time and begins to sequester that carbon as it becomes stronger and monolithic in your building. Having said that, not all of the molecules bind to the carbon molecules and they stay as free limes, which we'll learn about in just a second. Also important to know that the hemp, which is the construction infill, is of course absorbing a ton of CO2 while it is growing. Ultimate thermal performance. In order to get great thermal performance, which is also called thermal inertia or diffusivity in a home, it's difficult because we have to reconcile two concepts that are very difficult to reconcile. And those two concepts are thermal conductivity, the U value. We use the R value in America. They use the U value conductivity in Europe. And thermal capacity. Conductivity is you have a mass. How long does it take for thermal energy or temperature or heat to get through that mass and change the temperature on the other side of it? And thermal capacity is, what is this mass's capacity to store thermal heat or energy? And these two concepts are reconciled beautifully with hempcrete, thermal conductivity and thermal capacity. Now, why is that 30% of the magic of hemp? Why is it hemp? very important stuff. Number one, hemp contains silica, which binds beautifully with lime. Most cellulose does not contain silica to bind with lime. But most importantly, it is the thermal mass, the unique thermal mass of industrial hemp. Now, while it looks like canaf or flax while it's growing, it's actually very different on the inside, and it is the world's most valuable. We're not saying that there won't be future discoveries. It's just so far discovered on the planet Earth in all of history, it is the most valuable biomass, and it is perfect for insulation because, as we can see through the University of Bath magnified picture here, there are some beautiful holes and tubes which allow for this condensation and evaporation of moisture to move through the wall and even store that energy. It actually creates thermal energy to condense and evaporate through that living, breathing wall. The spongy porous material will actually allow vapor to pass through. It takes on a ton of water, and it will only take on a certain amount, and then the hempcrete will just excrete it through the exterior side. It is vapor permeable and, of course, totally non-combustible. You cannot burn your hempcrete home down. It is a fire...